Hey, gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the election ballot of free speech because we can speak freely about elections. And so go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send badly needed fundage. All right, today we are doing... Well, we're recording our Tuesday show, but we're recording it on Sunday. We just had the election. We're going to have a post election analysis. What you're asking? I thought the election was in 2 weeks. No. We're talking about the real election, the election in China for the the post up for grabs. Where you had the chairman or the general secretary of the Chinese Communist Party. You had the chairman of the military commission. I guess later you're going to have, because it's a different, I think it's a different election, you'll have an election for the president of China. And of course, Xi Jinping is the winner. So, what do we make of this, Mito?
Well, all I can say is today is a very good day, not for the United States, but for the People's Republic of China. President Xi Jinping has indeed secured a third term, meaning that he has now the power to lead the nation forward and to new depths. So long live President Xi Jinping, and glory to him.
Well, and so it's not unprecedented. Obviously, Chairman Mao had several 5-year terms, or I guess it was 5-year terms back then. It's 5-year terms nowadays. But Xi Jinping would be the second person to have, gotten a third term. Although, to be honest, from the late 1970s to the early 1990s, the paramount leader was Deng Xiaoping, and he was never chairman of the Communist Party. So anyway, it's not all that unprecedented.
That's right, because Deng Xiaoping, his position was a separate, special position designed to guide the party, to reform the party in the right direction from the wrong direction that Mao was taking, and Deng Xiaoping was to turn it around. And it was under Deng Xiaoping that they established 10-year term limits on the president of the Chinese Communist Party.
Because I'm a nerd, I'm going to say general secretary of the Communist Party. The president is a governmental position, not a party position, but he will be the president as well.
Yeah, well, okay. If you want to get real technically, a general secretary of the Chinese Communist Party, but, you know, that's effectively the president. But basically, Deng Xiaoping, he established a 10-year term limit in order to avoid another... I mean, it was almost like, you could say, in the Soviet Union under Khrushchev, they had de-Stalinization. Sort of, in a way, you could kind of say, like de-Maoism almost, but not nowhere near to the extent of how, you know, how they denounced Stalin. I mean, they still kept everything intact, but it was just, you know, the Mao's policies totally screwed everything up and we need to reform. That was what it was, and the 10-year term limit was because, well, if you look at the Chairman Mao at the very end of his term, you know, which was the very end of his life, I mean, he was basically a senile old man, didn't really know anything. I mean, you saw a picture of him sitting next to Nixon and Kissinger, you could just tell he really wasn't all there. So that's why they established a 10-year term limit. And, you know, that was the case under, you know, President Jiang Zemin and then President Hu Jintao. They both had 10-year term limits. And then President Xi Jinping comes along, and I think it was in 2015, when was it? Sometime between 2015 and 2020, they abolished the 10-year term limit, and now the general secretary can run, you know, as many terms as he wants for a lifetime. Mm-hmm. Until he decides.
Mm-hmm. And I was just going to ask for clarification. In the 1980s, was it... Hu Yaobang?
Yeah,
he had two terms but died in the middle of his term. Was that what happened?
Yeah, that he did die in the middle of one of his terms. And then I think his successor was Zhao Ziyang, was the successor to Hu Ya. And you know, I will say those two, you know, for all I care, I mean, they were pretty much traitors to, you know, the Chinese Communist Party and to China as a whole, because they were all about, you know, opening up all the way to the point of, you know, becoming subservient to the liberal West.
Were they?
Being put aside.
I don't feel like I have enough of a grasp on them to make that determination. So my question is, were they actual traitors, or do you think they were naive and mistaken? Because there's a difference.
Well, honestly, I don't. I mean, does it make a difference? Is it?
I think it makes a difference. I mean, people can be sincere and wrong.
Because I mean, I don't know about Hu Yaobang, but Zhao Ziyang, I mean, he was really about just, you know, becoming like the West, becoming another, you know, neoliberal colony of the U.S., kind of like Japan is.
Mm-hmm.
And you remember that show we did, you know, on June 4th, where we exposed Zhao Ziyang and his treachery and everything?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, and I just don't personally feel that I have enough expertise and information and knowledge to make that call, so I'm not making the call. I don't know. I don't have a feel for these people. And, you know, like, it's odd, because I do feel, I do think that I have a feel for Russian leaders, and yet Chinese leaders, I don't, for whatever reason, I don't know what it is. And I can read Chinese somewhat better. I mean, I can read it better than I can read Russian, but still, I don't know. I'm not exactly sure why that is.
Well, a lot of it, too, is just Chinese. They don't necessarily, you know, there are a lot of details. They don't, you know how in the West, everything is all about mass sensation. Everything has to be reported on, and every little detail. The Chinese don't really bother with trivial details. They just, you know, straightforward, the big picture, and that's it.
Yeah. Now, there was a little bit of drama at this event. Is this the Congress of People's Deputies? Is that what it's called? What's the official name of the event that took place?
It's basically the Communist Party meeting in the Great Hall of the People.
Okay.
What's the official English name?
It wouldn't be the Congress of People's Deputies. It would be something, though.
It's something else.
Is it a central committee meeting? Is it a? In certain ways, it would be the equivalent of these conventions that the Democrats and the Republicans have every 4 years, except it's much more meaningful.
Yeah, here it is, the 20th CPC Central Committee meeting.
Okay. 20th CCP Central Committee meeting.
Did I say 20th century?
20th? No, you said 20th.
Okay.
20th Central Committee meeting.
I want to be sure I didn't actually say 20th century. Yeah, 20th CPC Central Committee meeting.
And the Central Committee has, I believe, several hundred members. And then there is a Politburo that is selected from the Central Committee that has, I don't know, does it have a dozen members? It's much, much smaller. And that's very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the headline of an article saying, you know, the Politburo, that Xi Jinping selects loyalists for the Politburo. And it's like, well, Andrew Anglin kind of made the point, would you want him not to have loyalists? I mean, that's a whole disaster of President Trump administration, was he didn't have any loyalists in his cabinet. He had people who opposed him in his cabinet.
The Western media, apart from being just complete liars, they're also just retarded and have no common sense. I mean, yeah, you're supposed to select loyalists to your own cabinet. Yeah, well, what are you supposed to do, select traitors?
Which is what happened with President Trump, and that's what you're seeing. So,
the people that Trump, you know, selected to be in his cabinet, they all ended up stabbing in the back, and turning on him, and now we're in the mess we're in.
Yeah, I mean, think of William Barr, right?
Mm-hmm.
Think of William Barr, who's now just making the talk show rounds, saying how the last election was completely legitimate, and Trump's claims to the contrary are baseless. People like, who else? I mean, his Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, who completely undermined his foreign policy. And you could say the same thing with Nikki Haley at the UN, completely undermined it, and John Bolton prevented any kind of peace deal, which he was on the verge of finalizing with North Korea, preventing him from meeting with Vladimir Putin. And we can see where that led to.
Yeah,
you go on and on with that.
Yeah, just totally derailed where we are now.
Yeah. There was a blonde-haired Homeland Security Secretary. What was her name? She was a blonde woman in her 40s. And her name slips my mind, but, you know, he was trying to shut the border, and she was dragging her high heels on it. So, there you go. Okay, so what does all this mean? I'm not trying to just say rah, rah, rah for everything. I'm not trying to be rubber stamp approval of everything that the Chinese Communist Party does. I mean, the one thing that I saw from that meeting that I disapproved of was a lot of people wearing masks. Most people weren't, and Xi Jinping wasn't wearing a mask, but there were people wearing masks. And, you know, I think they're getting this wrong. I think they're getting the COVID stuff wrong, which I think is evidence that this wasn't something that they developed in their own laboratory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And then the thing with the mask, too, is, I mean, of course, East Asians, you know, have been wearing masks way before COVID. So it's not like it's anything new.
Yeah, for in Japan, they'll do it in hay fever season. In China, there are many Chinese cities that have a great deal of particulate pollution because of when I was there, I mean, they had a lot of coal burning plants. You could, when you were in the urban areas, you could smell the sulfur in the air because of all these coal burning plants for electricity. So, you know, they do it for certain reasons. So, and it's not as if everybody's always doing it, but it's something that you would see. Whereas in America, seeing people walking around with surgical masks never happened. You never saw it until COVID.
Yeah, until COVID. And yeah, I mean, the one that makes the least sense, yeah, a white person wearing a mask, it just doesn't look right.
Well, yeah, and then I don't want to go too far astray, but I saw a local news report from New York City, where there is this black guy, and he just shoves some white guy into the subway tracks and then runs off. And the police are looking for him, but they don't know what he looks like because he was wearing a COVID mask. You know, I mean, and this, there's so much of this. You know, they can go out, whether it's black criminals or other criminals, they can go out and hide their identity, and they can riot, and they can commit crimes, and, you know, they're allowed to. So, I don't know. Anyway, do you have anything to say about that?
Well, I mean, just the clown hell that we live in America.
There is a clown hell. That is, it is totally clown world.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Guess what? Goats. I see goats. What are goats doing here? You know what they're doing? They're eating brush. I've never seen goats here before. Okay, well, they look happy. Okay, but there was some drama. We mentioned before Xi Jinping's predecessor as general secretary and president was one Hu Jintao, and Hu Jintao was at this central committee meeting. In fact, he was sitting right next to Xi Jinping. And then what happened?
Well, as soon as the meeting ended, everyone was leaving, but two younger assistants came and helped Hu Jintao out of his chair and helped him out.
Right, it was before everybody was leaving. Everybody was sitting there, but they came in and helped him out. And there was some discussion out in the media that, oh, this is proof that there's that that Hu Jintao was dragged out. This is proof that there's disunity in the party, and that Xi Jinping is cracking down on his enemies. And is that what it looked like to you?
No, not at all. I mean, Hu Jintao, he's very old. I mean, I haven't seen him ever since, you know, I haven't seen a picture of him ever since he was general secretary. So I didn't, man, when I first saw him, I didn't recognize him, that he aged that much. So obviously he was, you know, very frail. He needed some assistance. So that's why, you know, a couple of CPC assistants came, young assistants came and helped him out. And, you know, yeah, I mean, he left before everyone else. Well, because, you know, elders generally go first. I mean, that's just common respect and decency. You let elders go first.
Well, and then,
yeah, and of course the Western media is always going to put a spin there. You know, just like they put a spin to, you know, any kind of, you know, small motions or anything that Trump does. Though they're doing the same thing to this, you know, the Western media puts the same projection on the CPC. Oh, well, first of all, I mean, if there's any kind of, you know, disunity or any kind of, you know, crackdown, they're not going to do it in front of everybody where everyone can see. It's going to be done, you know, behind the scenes. So to say that that's what it is just ridiculous. I mean, China, they, well enough, the whole world is wise. They know that especially the United States is watching. So they're not going to give the U.S. any kind of, you know, ammunition to use against them.
Yeah. And so, the story in the Chinese media is that Hu Jintao started to feel ill, and so he was helped away. And, of course, he wasn't being dragged out by security guards. He was being helped out by, you know, one was one of these members of the Politburo. I'm sorry, I don't know his name. But people, you know, people who were sitting near him, near, you know, because he was sitting right next. He was just to Xi Jinping's left. And it was people, party officials from right around there who were high party officials. I know one was at least one was a Politburo member. They helped him up. You know, there was one who was assisting on both arms. And he had a couple of words with, Xi Jinping, who smiled and he touched Xi Jinping on the shoulder. And then the person to immediately to Xi Jinping's right, I'm not sure who that was, but it was another Politburo member. And he had a few words with him, and then he patted that guy on the shoulder. And then walked away kind of, you know, not all that steady. He wasn't all that steady as he was walking. And he did look frail. He's 79. He'll be 80 in December, apparently. And, looks a lot older than he did when he was general secretary himself. So he's certainly aged. But, you know, I just want to remind people that, these people are humans. And sometimes they get sick, and you know things happen. And sometimes things happen when they are in public settings. So we have, very well known example would be President George H.W. Bush in his presidency, maybe 1991 or so, 91, 92, 93, something. Somewhere in the second part of his presidency, he was over in Japan, and he was at a banquet hosted by Japanese Prime Minister Keiichi Miyazawa, and then Bush at some point just kind of leaned over and threw up on Keiichi Miyazawa. He literally threw up on the Japanese Prime Minister, and then he had to be helped out because he had gotten sick, so he threw up.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, no child left behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing. Knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new Ease-Off Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The Ease-Off lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the Ease-Off? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my Ease-Off?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. Ease-Off LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
On Chiichi Miyazawa, he literally threw up on the Japanese prime minister, and then he had to be helped out. Because he had gotten sick. No, he threw up. And I'm sure you can try this at home. I'm sure that if you go to YouTube, I've never seen it. Well, but I'm sure it exists. I know this footage exists. If you go to YouTube and you type in, George Bush, Miyazawa or Japanese prime minister, throw up and monkey. Well, okay, just throw up. I'm sure you'll be able to see him throwing up. And then if you add monkey to the search term, you will find, I think you should be able to find, there was a monkey trainer in Japan who had a Japanese macaque, one of the Japanese snow monkeys, and he trained his monkey to act like he was throwing up. If the trainer would say, Bush-san, then the monkey would act as if he's throwing up.
Yeah.
Find this.
No. Yeah, I'm good. I won't be looking up that video anytime soon. Okay. Yeah, I'm good.
So that happened. And then, of course, you've had other examples. Prime Minister, what was his name? Toshiro Murayama. He was visiting, I think he was in Italy. He was from Japan. He was from Italy. And he was from the Socialist Party. He was a union guy and hadn't ever spent much time overseas, wasn't used to French cuisine, He's just used to like regular Japanese working man's food, had all this rich food, and he got sick. He got really sick and had to be carted out of a meeting.
Was it escargot?
It could have been. Who knows? Who knows? I'm not sure. And then, of course, with the Biden, the queen consort, Camilla, that's her name, right? Camilla, that's King George's wife. Camilla complained that when Biden was talking to her at an event earlier this year, I guess it was, that he was having severe flatulence. So you've got that. Oh, this is fun. And then one last example. So when the, I guess Pelosi and Adam Schiff and Gerald Nadler, when they were having some public event where they're laying out the, impeachment. I think that's what they were doing. They were laying out the impeachment case against Donald Trump. It's pretty daggone certain that Nadler pooped his pants while he was on stage, which meant he had to walk around like a penguin. And you can see him walking around like a penguin, trying to keep his bowel movement from falling down through his trouser legs.
He looks like the penguin from the Batman.
He does. He looks like the penguin from Batman. So yeah. These types of things, they're unfortunate. They do happen. So I would read.
I just want to say for the record for the any Communist Party members that might be listening, I apologize if you feel that we're almost comparing Hu Jintao to these disgusting failed Western-like rulers. I apologize. Well, that's not what we're trying to do.
Okay. So mentioning him in the same paragraph as George H.W. Bush, Joe Biden, and Gerald Nadler. Okay, that might seem insulting, but Toshiro Murayama was a decent guy. Mm-hmm. I'll just say that he might have been may have been kind of a failed prime minister. You could look at him that way, but I think he was well intentioned and a decent guy. So there you go. So we're going to have continuity in China. Is there any reason to be surprised? I mean, there were people who had been saying that, he might be deposed, that this was going to be a very contested election. Was that just like people's wishful thinking or American disinformation?
I mean, of course, there's always that off chance because, I mean, unlike the elections here, the elections there are actually legitimate. So there is always that off chance that it might happen, but. Chances are, most likely he was going to win. There's nothing to be surprised. I'm relieved that he won, that now that he can continue to make the nation stronger and lead it to new frontiers. So, yeah, a lot of it is just, Western media wishful thinking and them saying that, these Western rulers, particularly the United States, that's their wet dream, is to see President Xi Jinping, get deposed, and have a more, let's just say, a softer, more pro-Western type of rule, like a Dao Ziyang come into power.
And one thing I think,
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, people in the United States tend to equate politics with the kind of elections we have. So politics means people going around and making these speeches on. And, getting on TV and these interviews, and then you got these elections. But there's a lot more to politics than that. And politics takes place everywhere. It takes place everywhere, in countries. It takes place in offices, right? Office politics. And there's always been politics in China. And
you are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you. And your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
Extendivite really works. Here's just a few testimonials from Amazon. RL, 5 stars. Been taking this for 2 months now. I feel better. Have more energy. April, my husband started taking Extendivite, and he said he feels much better and has more energy. EW, need to try. Everyone needs this for their health. Great product, great people. Josie, it works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. JC, great product. Has worked well these last few years. To get your Extendivite today, go to extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because big tech, big pharma, and big brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Takes place everywhere, you know, in countries. It takes place in offices, right? Office politics. And there's always been politics in China. And regarding to like these CCP Central Committee meetings, so I remember reading a book 30 years ago, and it was The Politics of Economic Reform. Who was the author? Was it Susan Scher? I can't remember who the author was, but I remember reading this book, and this was written probably around 1990, plus or minus a year or two. And so you'd already had the economic reforms of Deng Xiaoping. They had started, they really, you know, had their infancy, I guess, in, well, as soon as he took power in the very late 1970s. And there was a politics to them. So the reforms didn't take place all across the country all at once. The reforms, they started piecemeal. So you had the Shenzhen, the now it's a mega city near Hong Kong, but at the time was just a fishing village. So that was turned into a kind of a free trade zone. It was exempted for, you know, certain things like private ownership of property and other other things having to do with currency and trade, were started in Shenzhen. And then other coastal areas followed suit. And there was a politics to this. And there was a politics in that these various, you know, big shots in China, which I would assume would include Hu Yaobang and Zhao Ziyang, including these people, but not limited to these people. But they were they wanted the support of Communist Party officials in these regions, in Guangzhou province or in Shanghai, in Fujian, as part of their own politics. There's always been internal politics. There was internal politics in the Soviet Communist Party, and so you know, it's easy to conceptualize a dictator and everybody just obeys the dictator, which is how we tend to think about Stalin. And maybe, you know, in some cases you do get a single person who's been able, through, you know, fear, intimidation or other things, to have pretty much that kind of control. But I think that's pretty few and far between. And in general, you know, there's politics that goes on. And so nothing should be, I think it's really super simplistic to look at Xi Jinping or look at Vladimir Putin as dictators. They maybe, you know, the first among a group of people that, you know, maybe a limited group of people, but the first among a group of people who are leading the country, but they all are operating in constraints. And even Mao Zedong operated within constraints. Unfortunately, those constraints didn't prevent him from implementing some really bad policies, but he operated obviously within constraints and sometimes was overruled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing, you know, this whole thing, oh, dictator. What is a dictator according to the Western liberal establishment? A dictator is any leader that the Western liberal establishment doesn't like. That's mm-hmm. what a dictator is. Whereas, you know, they could, and meanwhile, you know, what I'm trying to say here, kind of, dictators that are supported by the West, you know, like dictators by their own definition, despots, are not dictators. They're democratic, like you know, the Shah of Iran or Zelensky, for example. No, these are champions of democracy. Even though, I mean, they've banned all political parties and, you know, arrested any opposition. But no, these are champions of democracy. So, yeah, I mean, this whole thing, dictator, I mean, it's just like, you know, it's just like calling somebody a fascist or a white extremist or anti-Semite. I mean, dictator, just, you know, that's another label that the Western liberal elites like to use.
I saw over the weekend a video that was about 5 or 6 weeks old, or at least it was filmed 5 or 6 weeks ago. And it was some sort of conference or some sort of forum in Kiev, of all places. And it was hosted by Anne Applebaum, who is a writer at the very Jewish Atlantic magazine, which is editor-in-chief is Jeffrey Goldberg, who was he's a big Jew, and he's a military veteran of the Israeli military. He was a prison guard for Palestinians. But the Atlantic magazine, so Anne Applebaum was the moderator, and on the stage with her was Timothy Snyder, who is a professor at Yale, who I'm growing to really particularly dislike, but I am his current class at Yale on Ukrainian history is available online, so I'm able to follow his class in real time. But he took time out from teaching his course at Yale to fly over to Kiev and meet with Zelensky, and he's some sort of at least unofficial advisor to Zelensky. He's close enough to go flying off and meeting with Zelensky in the middle of the semester. So he was on stage, and then Neil Ferguson, who we've talked about before, is who's a British guy who teaches at Stanford and has, like, there's a lot wrong with him as well. He was on stage, and then there was somebody else who was joining by Zoom call. But I'm mentioning, because I think it was Neil Ferguson. It was either Neil Ferguson or Tim Snyder, but I think it was Neil Ferguson who described that war as the war in Ukraine right now as a struggle between authoritarianism and democracy. In that Putin would be the authoritarian and Zelensky the Democrat. Zelensky, who has banned all opposition parties. And you've got all sorts of opposition parties running in elections in Russia, and they're represented in the parliament.
Little Zelensky's arrested, you know, any fighting age male has tried to flee and forced them into the front lines.
Exactly.
This Mal Ferguson, that British liberal snob who, you know, lives in the U.S. because Britain is such a failed state and he wants to dictate, you know, American demography.
And that's a very good example, because by contrast, President Putin at the end of last month announced a mobilization or partial mobilization in Russia. Following that announcement, you had a fair number of Russian men who left the country, who went to Kazakhstan, went to Estonia, went to Finland. And Putin said that he's not going to punish these people.
Yeah, he just said, remember them as cowards, and that's it.
Yeah, and they're, you know, they're meeting their personnel goals, and, you know, it's just such a contrast, and yet somehow Putin is the dictator and Zelensky's the hero and the Democrat.
The champion of democracy. I know, it's just, that's the one thing too. People don't understand the whole partial mobilization, you know, the in Russia, the whole, I mean, basically it was almost like a draft in a way. And, you know, like in the U.S., there is, you know, also selective service, you know, to where at a moment's notice, anyone between the ages of, I think, 18 to 25, you know, have to go into the military. And in Russia, it's something similar to where it's just, you know, this is the nation, you know, patriotic war against, you know, evil forces against Russia. So basically it's a partial mobilization to tell people, okay, get ready, kind of thing.
So, and here's something else, you know, the authoritarianism versus democracy. Two questions. One is, you know, you look around the world, what does democracy even mean? And then B, you know, depending on whatever that definition is democracy even worth it? I mean, is it, what's it worth? If you're going to say that what we have in America or what they have in Western Europe is democracy, what's it worth? What is, if you're going to define it as one man, one person, one vote, in societies that are multicultural with very differential birth rates, with open borders, is one man one worth? One man one vote. How much is that worth defending? Is that worth giving your life for? Or is it possible? Is it conceivable that there might be actually a better system that produces better results for more people?
Yeah, not to mention too, I mean, if this democracy is so fragile and so, you know, able to be overthrown that it needs, you know, totalitarian military measures to
protect it.
Or keep it in place. It's like, is it truly, you know, the will of the people? Of course not.
It's so precious and fragile, and we need to take care of it. And whenever we're going to have a sacred election, everyone else in the world, they have to make sure they don't even sneeze, because that might interfere with our election.
Or, you know, God forbid, any right-wing populist party gains popularity. Oh, no, they're getting popular. They're a threat to democracy. We need to ban them. You know, like they're doing in Europe now with and I think in... There was an article that talked about, you know, in Germany, the alternative for Deutschland, you know, the leftists, the liberal left was trying to ban them, saying that they're posing a threat to democracy. It's just so ridiculous. Like, they're not even trying to keep, you know, a facade.
like personally, I think of myself as basically a pragmatist. And what does pragmatism mean? I mean, you know, you're trying to get good results that are obtainable, that are going to be good results, realistic. What does it mean? Well, it depends in different contexts. And then I think in the context of American history, in the American situation, pragmatism, well, to the extent that you can have continuity with our founding documents and founding principles, the Constitution, to the extent that you can have continuity with them, that's good. It's gonna lend to legitimacy, and I think there really were a lot of good ideas and good structures that were laid down by the founders that stood the test of a lot of time. But you know, at the same time, the Constitution isn't the suicide pact. I think one of our Supreme Court judges once said something akin to that. And what I mean by it is, you know, at the end of the day, if sticking to our current system leads to, say, a civilization-ending nuclear war or the extinction of the very people that were responsible for founding the country, do you go down with the ship? And I think pragmatism would say, no, you don't.
Yeah, I mean, or you know, we can even look at China, you know, with Maoist communism. That's like, you know, yeah, Mao, he was the one who founded the People's Republic of China. He was the one who built, you know, the new China. But it's like his policies sucked. They were complete disasters. But, oh, no, he's, you know, we need to go down with him. I mean, is that the mentality that the Chinese after him took? No. Is we gotta turn this thing around. Was the mentality of the Chinese leaders after Mao died.
You said something interesting at the beginning of this broadcast, and you were comparing comparing Stalinism with Maoism, and saying that that Khrushchev had denounced Stalin, and that the modern CCP, the post-Mao CCP, did not denounce Mao. And, you know, this is true. But ironically, the post-Stalin, the post-Khrushchev denunciation Soviet Union or Soviet Communist Party did much less to distance itself from the policies of Stalin than the post-Mao Party. Like, the post-Mao Party in China, while not explicitly denouncing Mao, have done pretty much a 180 and have embarked on very, very different policies while continuing to, you know, honor Mao, and Mao's portrait is still hangs in the Tiananmen Square.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point, because, yeah, the Soviets, they denounced the person. They kept the distance away from the person, Stalin, but not the policies. Whereas in China, it was the exact opposite. They didn't denounce the person Mao so much, but his policies they stay away from.
Mm.
Look who's still around.
Yeah, and the denunciation of Stalin, you know, if you actually examine it, it really was, he was being denounced not for what he did to the country, and not for what he did to Russian or other Soviet people, but for what he did to the party, what he did to people in the party. That's really where the denunciation was. It was that he, you know, he had these show trials that he wound up overseeing the execution or otherwise demise of all of the people who were on the Politburo with him. I think at the time that Lenin passed away, all his fellow Politburo members met their demise in one way or another at the hands of Stalin. And really, the denunciation of Stalin was that. It really wasn't so much the police state. Well, I can't say the police state he implemented. Well, I mean, the police state was implemented before he was the paramount leader, although who was the official who was in charge of creating these structures under Lenin? And it was Stalin. Mm-hmm. Stalin was which is why he was able to win the ensuing power struggle after Stalin's death.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't it because of all the Jews after Lenin died were fighting amongst themselves as to who would be the next Jew, and they all just said, all right, well, we'll just, you know, Stalin, he's the only non-Jew, and because he doesn't have any power, we'll still be running things behind the scenes, so let's just make him the front. But they didn't realize that he had more power than they underestimated him, in other words.
I don't know. And, you know, this type of thing does happen, for sure. This type of thing will happen where...
Did you know that essential oils have had a multitude of natural health and skin uses in history, but have been somewhat forgotten by recent civilization? Susanna's Secret offers 100% pure and natural oils at prices you can actually afford. Do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the one in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, and fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you will see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Purifica, another one of our products used to clean and freshen your house or give a natural scent when drying laundry. For that special lady, we offer a ginger argan oil in a beautiful cosmetic bottle or a pure argan oil, a natural acne-fighting product. Check us out at SusannaSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com. S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com. Hey, do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the ones in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, or fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you'll see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Check us out at SusannaSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com.
Hello, I'm Peter Serafine, and I'm the new host of National Intel Report on Thursdays here on Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm a gun-owning constitutionalist who believes that the only role of government is to protect my rights. I believe the First Amendment makes us free, and the Second Amendment keeps us free. If those ideas sound good to you, then join me in the National Intel Report, Thursdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Republic Broadcasting Network.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee by going to rbnhemppaste.com and ordering a trial pack of happy packets for $5 with free shipping. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
Didn't realize that he had more power than they underestimated him, in other words.
I don't know. And, you know, this type of thing does happen, for sure. This type of thing will happen where if you've got two factions within a group that are struggling, sometimes as a compromise, they'll put in somebody who is deemed as being weak without a power base, put them into an important position in order to just kind of enable a truce so that, you know, you can, without settling the issue today, maybe you can strengthen your position and at some time in the future, gain the upper hand. And that type of thing does happen. And maybe there was an element of that, but I'm not 100% sure, but my understanding from having read, Stephen S. Cohen's book, on this period of time, actually it's his biography of, Nikolai Bukharin, that within the, only about half the members of the Politburo were Jewish. And he describes three factions, what he calls the left wing Jewish faction. He did say it was either he called it the Jewish faction or he said it was a faction that was almost entirely Jewish. I can't remember the exact terminology. Said that there was a Slavic or Russian faction. The only actual ethnic Russian in the Politburo was, Bukharin, although I suppose there might have been a Ukrainian or a Belarusian, and so, you know, there might have been some other non-Jews. And then he describes a third faction of Trans-Caucasians, which would be primarily Georgians, but presumably I'm pretty sure there's an Armenian, there could have been an Azerbaijani.
So basically you had three, there was the left opposition, which was, you know, the Jewish part, then you had the right opposition, which was predominantly the Russian, white Russian part, and then you had the center, which was like the kind of the multi-ethnic part, was the center.
That was his description. Whether that's accurate or not, I don't know independently, but I have a high respect for Cohen. And the way events transpired was that Stalin and his Caucasian buddies allied themselves with Bukharin in opposition to the Jewish faction. And then when the Jewish faction was weakened and Trotsky went into exile, then he wound up adopting their policies and then turned against Bukharin and the right and, you know, Russian faction. That's the way things transpired. So that the policies, like the policy of collectivization of agriculture, and that was a Jewish policy that Stalin initially opposed, but then wound up implementing.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's rather, you could say, anticlimactic for what happened. It's like, you know, he got rid of the Jews, which was good, but then he took their policies, which was totally destroyed everything.
Yeah. And, you know, we're out of time, so we don't have time to talk about it. But, you know, it's just an example that there's all sorts of politics that goes on everywhere. And I'm sure you could find politics in Saudi Arabia. You could find politics in all sorts of places where, you know, mass popular elections might not be all that important. But at any rate, do you have any final thoughts before we wrap up the show?
Yeah, I just want to say one more time, glory to China, glory to the CCP, and long live Chairman Xi.
And I will second that. And I will be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
OPEC Plus cut oil production by 2 million barrels a day. I'm Peter Serafin with today's Liberty Minute. The oil-producing nations of OPEC Plus announced that they are cutting oil outputs by 2 million barrels a day. Senator Joe Manchin said the move shows that the U.S. must emphasize American energy independence and security. Seems like I've heard that before. In response to the output cut, the Biden administration announced the release of 10 million more barrels from the nation's strategic petroleum reserves. Gee, that will cover the shortfall for a whole 5 days. Then what? Biden has already drained the reserves to their lowest point in decades. Biden created this problem by forcing his green agenda and is using the nation's strategic reserves as his party's campaign checkbook to attempt to bring gas prices down before next month's elections. Find more news and commentary at liberty-lighthouse.com. Until tomorrow, Sivas Pashem, Parabellum.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.